Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mega.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely making our way through the story of the Cosmere, more specifically, Stormlight Archive. We're working on Oathbringer right now, the third book. This part, it might get cut out, but in case things go wrong, I'm going to leave it in. Last episode has an audio issue in it that I'm going to try to fix, and I think I'm going to be able to fix it, but in case I don't, sorry, we lost the end of part one. Shallan confronted Rey Shafir, the Midnight Mother. Kaladin left the Parchment and returned to Yirithiru, and Yasna returned. And that was pretty much it.
Yep.
Now we can get into what we have to talk about this week, which is the interludes, first of all. And then we're going to do a little bit of part two. But interlude one is titled Pooley. And it starts... Pooley, the lighthouse keeper, tried not to let everyone know how excited he was for this new storm. Pooley is gathering scraps of wood that had been blown by the Everstorm, while comforting a woman who had lost her third husband to the storm. All three had died at sea. Still, he was excited for the storm.
Maybe you should stop marrying sailors if you don't want your husbands to die at sea.
Yeah, probably. He pulled his cart past homes that had been destroyed by the storm. Pooley's grandfather could remember when the nearby cliffs hadn't been there. Kalek himself had broken apart the land in a storm, creating shelter for a new set of homes. Those houses were where the rich had lived. Travelers would stop in this port on the eastern edge of Roshar to shelter from the storms. One of those travelers, a Thalen woman, and not a Natanatan, like Pooley, so these are the blue people that live on the eastern coast, yes, was inspecting her ship that had sunk during the storm. Pooley picked up a few planks from the broken ship that had washed onto the shore of the cove, then threw them into his cart. Even if it had destroyed many a ship, Pooley was happy for this new storm, secretly happy. Had the time finally come that his grandfather had warned of? The time of changes, when the men from the hidden island of the origin at last came to reclaim Natanatan. Even if not, this new storm brought him so much wood. He gathered it all eagerly, piling his cart high. He passed fishers that wondered how they were supposed to survive now that they had two storms to worry about. A tragedy, he told Alam, while helping him clear the refuse of his barn. Many of the boards ended up in Pooley's cart. A tragedy, he agreed with Hemadoc as he watched her children so she could run a broth to her sister, who was sick with the fever. A tragedy, he told the drummer boys as brothers as he helped them pull a tattered sail from the surf and stretch it out onto the rocks. At last, Pooley finished his rounds and pulled his little cart up the long, twisting road toward Defiance. That was his name for the lighthouse. Nobody else called it that, because to them, it was just the lighthouse. At the top, he left an offering of fruit for Kalek, the herald who lived in the storm. Then he pulled his wagon into the room on the bottom floor. Defiance wasn't a tall lighthouse. Defiance was only two stories tall and built squat like a bunker. She'd stood for over 100 years, and Kalek hadn't decided to knock her down. The Stormfather knew how important she was. Pooley brought the wood to the top and set it beside the fire to dry, then stepped up to the rim of the lighthouse. "They'll come with light in their pockets," Grandfather had said. "They'll come to destroy, but you should watch for them anyway, because they'll come from the origin, the sailors lost on an infinite sea. You keep that fire high at night, Pooley. You burn it bright until the day they come. They'll arrive when the night is darkest." Surely that was now, with a new storm. Darkest nights, a tragedy. And a sign. And that is the end of the interlude.
I comprehended 0% of that, except for what I said, which was, maybe you shouldn't marry sailors if you don't want them to die at sea.
Not gonna lie to you, Mango, I also have no fucking clue what that means. My guess is that it's more building up the origin and that there's something out there, and that I think maybe that might be involved in the climax of either the series or Stormlight 5, who knows, but
supposedly there's something out there.
Yeah. Interlude 2 is titled Elista. This is another interlude that has really important information in it, but the actual specifics of the person telling it are really inconsequential to me. So I'm going to give you the most basic rundown of what happens. It was an ardent in a monastery on the slopes of the Horneater Peaks, and all she wants to do is read her trashy romance novel. All around her, the ardents are in an uproar over the Everstorm, and she can't find somewhere quiet to read. Eventually, she wanders out into the woods and finds a nice spot to read. Sanderson takes his best shot at trashy romance, and it's pretty funny, but it's not worth the time it would take to read it all. Another ardent interrupts her and asks her if she's done with her part of the Dawn Chant translations that they've been doing since Navani cracked the code using Dalinar's visions. If you remember in the previous books, they discovered that the rambling that Dalinar does during his visions, he's actually saying what he's saying in the vision, but in the Dawn Chant. And so
they're using that to translate everything else.
Yes. The woman Ardent has made more progress than anyone else, seeing as all the other Ardents have been worrying over the Everstorm. She says that based off the different sections of the Dawn Chant that originated from different corners of Roshar, she surmises that at one point, everyone across Roshar wrote one language, but did not all speak one language. She says that this would explain how people forgot how to use the Dawn Chant. They'd already been speaking different languages for a long time, and only scholars had written in the Dawn Chant. The other Ardent notices her trashy romance book and says that he's also a fan. He offers to let her borrow his copy of the sequel if she'll translate a stubborn section of the Dawn Chant that a patron of his has requested. And that is the end of the interlude.
Interesting. Okay.
You'll have an answer for that by the end of the book.
For what? I had zero questions.
Yeah. Who's the patron? Who has requested this part of the Dawn Chant translated?
I don't care until you mentioned that I should care. Yeah. And now I'm like, why?
You
why,
should care.
Why
Mango.
Should I care?
Oh, you'll find out. Okay. Interlude 3 is titled The Rhythm of the Lost. And I fucked up because I forgot that I need to get Venli's symbol. Boom. There's Venli's chapter symbol. It is a listener standing on a plateau with lightning in the background, and there's something floating in her hand.
Cool.
Venli attuned the rhythm of craving as she climbed down into the chasm. Stormform gave her a powerful grip that allowed her to easily climb down the chasm. The new plating under her skin was less bulky than Warform's, but was nearly as effective. It had easily deflected a spear during the Battle of Narok. She now only heard new superior rhythms. She reached the bottom with the others, and Ulim, a spren in the form of rolling lightning, joined them. He formed into a human shape with odd eyes. She wasn't certain why a spren sent by Odium himself would look human. "Around here somewhere," Ulim said, pointing. "Spread out and search." Venli set her jaw, humming to the rhythm of fury. "Why should I continue to obey your orders, spren? You should obey me." The spren ignores her, which frustrates Venli, but she's led away by her once-mate, Demid, before she can lash out. She complains that she should be in charge and wonders why they haven't been told anything. They'd sacrificed so many to return their gods, and now they were being ignored. She'd spent so long meeting with Ulim in secret, guiding her people towards Stormform, and now only a fraction of her people lived. Demid says their sacrifice was worth it, as they've rediscovered the forms of power. Venli could feel the pulsing within her gem heart of the spren she herself had captured. They continued to search in silence, Demid pointing out a figure slumped against the chasm wall. A shard blade rammed into the stone floor beside her. Eshonai looked exhausted. In fact, she wasn't moving. "Eshonai," Venli said, kneeling beside her sister, "are you well? Eshonai." She gripped the plated figure by the shoulders and slightly shook it. The head rolled on its neck, limp. Venli felt cold. Demid solemnly lifted Eshonai's faceplate, revealing dead eyes. "Ah," Ulim's voice said. "Excellent." The spren approached. "Huh. Plate looks completely drained, broken along the back, I see. Well, it's said to regrow on its own, even now that it's separated from its master from so long ago." "The plate?" Venli said softly. "You wanted the plate?" "Well, the blade too, of course. Why else would we be hunting a corpse?" You thought she was alive. When you said we needed to find my sister, I thought..." "Yes, looks like she drowned in the storm's floodwaters," Ulim said. "Rammed the sword into the stone, held onto it to stay in place, but couldn't breathe." Venli attuned to the rhythm of the lost. It was one of the old, inferior rhythms. She hadn't been able to find those since transforming. Eshonai, she whispered, and nudged the corpse again. Touching the bodies of the fallen was taboo. The old song spoke of days when humans had hacked apart listener corpses searching for gem hearts. Vanley stared into Eshonai's dead eyes. You were the voice of reason. You were the one who argued with me. You were supposed to keep me grounded. What do I do without you? Well, let's get that plate off, kids, Ulam said. Show respect. Respect for what? It's for the best that this one died. For the best? For the best? She stood, confronting the little Spren. That is my sister. She is one of our greatest warriors, an inspiration and a martyr. Ulam rolled his head in an exaggerated way. Your sister didn't undergo the transformation properly. She resisted, and we'd have eventually lost her. She was never dedicated to our cause. Venli attuned the rhythm of fury. You will not say such things. You are Spren. You are to serve. And I do. Then you must obey me. You? Child, how long have you been fighting your little war against the humans? 3, 4 years? 6 years, Spren, Demid said. 6 long, bloody years. Well, do you want to guess how long we've been fighting this war? Go ahead. Guess. I'm waiting. Venli seethed. It doesn't matter. Oh, but it does. Do you know how to lead armies, Venli? True armies. Supply troops across a battlefront that spans hundreds of miles? Do you have memories and experiences that span eons? She glared at him. Our leaders know exactly what they're doing. Them I obey. But I am the one who escaped, the Spren of redemption. I don't have to listen to you. I will be a queen, Venli said despite. If you survive, maybe. But your sister? She and the others sent that assassin to kill the human king specifically to keep us from returning. Your people are traitors, though your personal efforts do you justice, Venli. You may be blessed further if you are wise. Regardless, get that armor off your sister, shed your tears, and get ready to climb back up. These plateaus are crawling with the men who stink of honor. We must be away and see what your ancestors need us to do. Our ancestors? Demid said. What do the dead have to do with this? Everything, Ulam replied, seeing as they're the ones in charge. Armor, now. He moved off. The others gathered up Eshonai's shard plate, leaving Venli to take the shard blade. Venli felt something stir inside her. Again distantly, she was able to hear the rhythm of the lost. Finally, I don't have to listen to you call me a fool. I don't have to worry about you getting in the way. I can do what I want. That terrified her. She turned to go, but paused as she saw something. What was that small Spren that had crept out from beneath Eshonai's corpse? It looked like a small ball of white fire. It gave off little rings of light and trailed a streak behind it. Like a comet. What are you? Venli demanded despite. Shoo! She hiked off, leaving her sister's corpse there at the bottom of the chasm, stripped and alone. Food for either a chasm fiend or a storm. And that is the end of the chapter.
That's depressing.
Yep. I hope you're ready for more Venli.
Mm.
She's a main character.
Ugh.
Yep. I didn't like her either. And, luckily, Esh and I hadn't sworn any ideals, so that Spren is still alive. But what is it going to do now? Part 2 is titled New Beginning Sing, and the POVs are Shallan, Jasna, Dalinar, and Bridge 4. This is a pretty cool image. I really like it. It's our first sketch of Urithiru, now that Kaladin has returned. Shallan has been able to do a proper sketch from the air. And of course, because Shallan is Shallan, she had to get a little sketch in of Emo Bridge Boy as well, looking majestic as he floated in the sky.
It's like, yes, I do not mind that this boy murdered my brother. I will still draw him because I want to.
Yes. You can see there's a little cutaway drawing from the east. What it looks like, you can see kind of what it looks like peeking out of the mountain and then how it runs down into the mountain. And then from the west, you can see, I mean, this is something that I want to see so badly. I want to see this adapted because it just, I mean, look at it. Like, I want to see this. Oh, but you can see there's all the, Oathgate platforms.
Oh, so the kind of a there isn't cutaway. A bunch of towers. It's just one tower. And then there's a bunch of gates.
Yes.
Oh.
So
the city of Urithiru is just a single tower?
Yes. But it is massive.
Yes.
There's little for scale. The city is incredibly huge. A chasm fiend's back would not reach the fourth floor. And if you zoom in on that image, you can see she's drawn a little chasm fiend in the corner, and
that's a chasm fiend, and those are massive. Compared to humans.
And this is how big, and that's how big the city is. It doesn't even reach the top of the first level. Yeah, and there's 10 levels, which makes sense. And then there's a bunch of floors per level. But yeah. It's massive. I'd love to see it done. Oh, God.
I mean, it's not as big as New York, but it's huge.
No, but it's massive. It is absolutely massive. Chapter 33 is titled A Lecture. It has Shallan's symbol. Oh, I forgot about this part. And the epigraph reads, Mango, "Dearest Sephandrius, I received your communication, of course." So this is the part where we get all of the letters to Hoid. And whoever is writing this letter knows Hoid as Sephandrius. Sephandrius is a fun name.
Very strange name to say.
Yes. Yes, Sephandrius. That is and I'll tell you, that is an ancient name for Hoid.
Is it his original name?
I don't think so. But I'm going to tell you this. I'll tell you this actually. I'm going to tell you this episode. I'll tell you after, at the beginning of the next chapter. So this chapter starts, again, has Shallan's symbol, and it starts, "Yasna was alive. Yasna Colin was alive." Shallan had spent the next day in her room sketching and thinking. She'd recovered from her bout of only drawing pages and pages of twisted images, and was back to being more analytical while recording her experience with the unmade. Adolin, Polona, Dalinar, and Navani had all been to check on her. They'd had so many questions about the unmade, and she had just wanted to be left alone. She tried to distract herself with her drawing, but kept coming back to the same daunting fact. Yasna was alive. Yasna was alive. That changed everything. Yasna was supposed to visit her later in the evening, but Shallan got up early and finally left her room to find the woman. She had to know how the woman had survived. She was frustrated with Yasna's flair for the dramatic, thinking back to when she'd soulcast those thieves in Carbranth. Yasna didn't want to merely prove her points. She wanted to drive them right into your skull. Why hadn't she written via Spanry to let everyone know she had survived? Where had she been all this time? Shallan was told that Yasna was at the bottom of the pit, and Shallan trudged down the stairs again. The oppressive feelings that she'd felt since arriving seemed to have evaporated. Guards let her pass with a bow and a murmur of brightness radiant. She found Yasna in the room where she'd faced off against the Midnight Mother, and she got her first good look at the gemstone pillar in the center. It wasn't a single gemstone, but a myriad of them, fused together. Emerald, ruby, topaz, sapphire, all 10 varieties seemed to have been melted into a single thick pillar 20 feet tall. She wondered what it would look like infused with stormlight. Guards stood at a barricade near the tunnel that the unmade had escaped into, and Yasna rounded the pillar. Shallan thirsts over her a bit, and she feels insecure as the first day she'd met the woman.
She
thirsts over her a bit. Talks about how beautiful she is and how it's unfair that she looks so incredible, even though she had been through so much. I think this is the book where Sanderson realizes that he had been writing Shallan as bi and starts to really lean into it.
Okay, Shallan.
It comes out more in a little bit more in this book, and even more in Rhythm of War. Yasna had come out of her ordeal looking no worse for wear. "My mother," Yasna said, "thinks this must be some kind of incredibly intricate fabrial, a logical assumption. We've always believed that the ancients had access to great and wonderful technology. How else do you explain shard blades and shard plate? Brightness? But shard blades aren't fabrials. They're spren, transformed by the bond. As are fabrials, after a manner of speaking. You do know how they're made, don't you?" "Only vaguely. This was how their reunion went. A lecture? Fitting. You capture a spren and imprison it inside a gemstone crafted for the purpose. Artifabrians have found that specific stimuli will provoke certain responses in the spren. For example, flame spren give off heat, and by pressing metal against a ruby with the flame spren trapped inside, you can increase or decrease that heat." Mango.
Yes?
They're going to go into a lot more detail on this stuff next book, but I'm going to point out now that what they're starting to talk about is how Mistborn's magic system interacts with the rest of the Cosmere. You know enough about Mistborn for this to make some sense, And Rhythm of War is really the science book, and they're going to get into it. But the fact that pressing a specific metal against a fabrial will cause the heat to increase or decrease is tied to how zinc and brass work with allomancers and how they can enrage and soothe emotions.
Wait, but the metal isn't the same type of metal as zinc or brass?
She's not specifying what kind of metal it is, but the assumption is maybe if they were, like, maybe they know and she's just not saying, but that if you push zinc against a flame spren, like a heating fabrial, it would make it hotter.
Oh, because it makes them angry.
Something is definitely happening.
Ooh.
And they're going to get into a lot of that in Rhythm of War.
That's cool, though.
It is the science book.
But
yes.
Wait, but that implies that because Spren are technically investiture, that the Mistborn magic interacts with them the same way it does with, like, mistings and stuff.
If you remember as well, technically metal is... In the Cosmere, metal is also investiture. Because
all
that's
metal is? Spren because I thought metal. It was only certain people...
Not all metals, but... And they'll get more into this in Mistborn, but it seems that at least allomantic metals are, to some extent, investiture.
Oh, I thought it was that certain people had investiture, and they could use certain metals certain ways, but only, like, certain types. I thought it was that the people were special, so they could use natural resources a certain way, not that the natural resources themselves were magic.
The people are special, but so are the natural resources.
That's too many levels of special.
Mango, there's a lot of special happening in the Cosmere. But we're gonna just kind of put that away for now, and we'll come back to it later.
Okay, eventually. By later, you mean, like, in a couple books.
Yes. Shallan says, that's, and Yasna goes, incredible? Horrible. Brightness, we're imprisoning Spren? No worse than hitching a wagon to a chull. Sure, if in order to get a chull to pull a wagon, you first have to lock it in a box forever. Pattern hummed softly from her skirts in agreement. Yasna just cocked an eyebrow. There are Spren and there are Spren, child. She rested her fingers on the pillar again. Do a sketch of this for me. Be certain to get the proportions and colors right, if you please. Shallan was shocked by the casual command. It hit her for the first time that she was still Yasna's ward, despite all that she had done recently. She got to work. I was heartened to hear that you made it here on your own, Yasna said. I apologize for what happened on the Wind's Pleasure. My lack of foresight caused the deaths of many, and a doubtless hardship for you, Shallan. Please accept my regret. Shallan shrugged, sketching. You've done very well. Imagine my amazement when I reached the Shattered Plains, only to discover that the war camp had already relocated to this tower. What you have accomplished is brilliant, child. We will need to speak further, however, about the group that again tried to assassinate me. The Ghostbloods will almost certainly start targeting you now that you've begun progressing toward your final ideals.
So about that.
You're sure it was the Ghostbloods that attacked the ship? Of course I am. Are you certain you are well enough to be about, child? You seem uncharacteristically reserved. I'm fine. You're displeased because of the secrets I kept. We all need secrets, Brightness. I know this more than anyone. But it would have been nice if you had let us know you were alive. She thought that they were on their own, and all this time Yasna had been on her way back. Yasna says that she only had the opportunity when she reached the Shattered Plains, and she was worried about Ghostblood assassins at that point. But how did you even survive in the first place? Child, I'm an Elsecaller. Of course, an Elsecaller, Brightness. A thing you never explained. A word which no one but the most dedicated scholar of the esoteric would recognize. That explains it perfectly. Yasna smiled for some reason. All Radiants have an attachment to Shadesmar. Our Spren originate there, and our bond ties us to them. But my order has special control over moving between realms. I was able to shift to Shadesmar to escape my would-be assassins. And that helped with the knife in your storming chest? No, not... But surely, by now, you've learned the value of a little stormlight when it comes to bodily wounds. My true difficulty was not escaping, but returning. My powers make it easy to transfer to Shadesmar, but getting back to this realm is no small feat. I had to find a transfer point, a place where Shadesmar and our realm touch, which is far, far more difficult than one might assume. It's like going downhill one way, but uphill to get back. Well, perhaps her return would take some pressure off Shallan. Yasna could be Brightness Radiant, and Shallan could be, well, whatever she was. We will need to converse further. I would hear the exact story from your perspective of the discovery of Urethiru, and I assume you have sketches of the transformed parchment that will tell us much. I believe I once disparaged the usefulness of your artistic skill. I now find reason to call myself foolish for that presumption. It's fine, Brightness. I can get you those things, and there's a lot to talk about. But how much of it would she be able to say? How would Yasna react to finding that Shallan had been dealing with the Ghostbloods? It's not like you're really a part of their organization, she thought to herself. If anything, you're using them for information. Yasna might find that admirable. Shallan still wasn't eager to broach the topic. I feel lost, Yasna said. Shallan looked up from her sketchbook to find the woman regarding the pillar again, speaking softly as if to herself. For years I was at the very forefront of all this. One short stumble and I find myself scrambling to stay afloat. These visions that my uncle is having, the refounding of the Radiance in my absence. That Windrunner. What do you think of him, Shallan? I find him much as I imagined his order, but I have only met him once. It has all come so quickly. After years of struggling in the shadows, everything coming to light, and despite my years of study, I understand so very little. Shallan continued her sketch. It was nice to be reminded that, for all their differences, there were occasional things that she and Yasna shared. She just wished that ignorance wasn't at the top of the list. And that is the end of chapter 33.
Calling Yasna ignorant is very bold.
Yeah, definitely isn't ignorant. But I do like this scene for Yasna in that it's like, even she's out of her element. And she wasn't around when everybody was learning everything and practicing. So she feels like she's fallen behind a little bit.
Yeah, she was ahead of everyone else and then she disappeared and then everyone kind of, not fully caught up to her level of knowledge, but they, I guess it's like if someone who is like a historian kind of like hibernated for 20 years and then came back and now everyone doesn't necessarily know what they know about like the past and just general scholarly stuff, but they're not exactly all knowledgeable either.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like if somebody who was like an expert in European history or in world history even before the discovery of America and of the like North America and South America, and they disappeared and then came back after North and South America had been discovered. They're still experts in their field beyond everybody else, but all of a sudden 40,000 new fields have opened up that everybody has been learning in, and you're like, I didn't even know. Like, Yasna wasn't digging into the Windrunners and all these other orders. She was an expert in herself and what her experiences were, right? And now all of a sudden it's becoming much broader.
She was studying the past as a whole, but she didn't necessarily learn about all the individual orders completely. So she had much more of a general knowledge, which was still more than everyone else had. But now people are learning about the individual orders, and she has no idea. Well, she doesn't have as much of an idea.
I think it does a lot to her character to have her be a little bit in the dark, just because before she was kind of all-knowing, you know, and that can get a little boring after a while. But having her be just, you know, throw some areas of where she's not as competent is good.
It's like, hey, I'm back finally. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, what do you mean the Almighty is talking to you, Uncle? You know, like...
I didn't even believe in him. What do you mean he's talking to
you?
What do you mean you're literally bound to the Stormfather himself? What?
Chapter 34 is titled Resistance, and the epigraph reads, I noticed its arrival immediately, just as I noticed your many intrusions into my land. The letters in this book, Mango, are written to Hoid from some of the other shards.
Oh.
I noticed your many intrusions into my land is one of the other gods talking to Hoid saying, I know that you've been fucking hanging out on my world.
Why are you here?
Yes.
What are you
meddling with? Sephandrius is the name that the gods would know Hoid by.
But that's... so that's not his original name. But it's as... That name... is as old as the gods are. Well, maybe not, but...
Yes.
It's from the time of the gods.
Yes.
And...
It's not his original name. It's not his
original name.
No.
Is he older than the gods?
That... I think these letters will clear up Hoid's...
Or did they come about and just when he met the shards, he went by a different name?
If I remember, yes. So, yes, but this part will clear up Hoid's relationship with the gods in these letters. It will become clear what his relationship is.
Okay.
Chapter 34, again, resistance. It has Dalinar symbol. All went dark around Dalinar, and he entered a place between his world and the visions, a place with a black sky and an infinite floor of bone-white rock. I have her, the Thalen Queen. My storm hits her city now. Good, Dalinar said. Please, give her the vision. Fenn was to see the vision with the Knights Radiant falling from the sky, come to save a small village. Dalinar wanted her to see the Knights Radiant firsthand, as they had once been, righteous, protecting. Dalinar tells the Stormfather to put her in the same home that Dalinar had been placed in his first time through the vision. The Stormfather tells him that he must also be a part of the events, and Dalinar tells him to just pick anyone, but to make sure that Fenn sees him as himself. He also asks to keep a weapon to defend himself. The Stormfather rumbled in annoyance, but did not object. The place of endless white stone faded. What was that place? It is no place. But everything else in these visions is real. So why is it that it is no place? Dalinar fell silent. I imagined it, the Stormfather said more softly, as if he were admitting something embarrassing. All things have a soul. A vase, a wall, a chair. And when a vase is broken, it might die in the physical realm. But for a time, its soul remembers what it was. So all things die twice. Its final death is when men forget it was a vase, and think only of the pieces. I imagine the vase floating away then, its form dissolving into the nothingness. Dalinar had never heard anything so philosophical from the Stormfather. Then, he finds himself hurtling through the sky, stormlight streaking from him. A radiant and blue armor that glowed flew ahead of him. He notes that the man must be a Windrunner, and that Dalinar has taken the place of the female radiant that had accompanied him. She had worn amber shard plate. Dalinar still didn't know why radiant plate glowed, while modern shard plate did not. Was the ancient plate living somehow, like radiant blades lived? Perhaps he could find out from that radiant ahead. How far are we? Dalinar asked. Not long now, the man shouted back. I think something might be wrong with my armor. I can't make my helm retract. In response, the other radiant made his vanish. Dalinar caught sight of a puff of light or mist. Retract your helm, he shouted. You haven't summoned your armor yet. You had to dismiss it so I could lash you. Oh. I mean earlier. It wouldn't vanish when I wanted it to. Talk to Harkelane then, or to your Spren. The Windrunner frowned. Will this be a problem for our mission? I don't know, but it distracted me. Tell me again how we know where to go, and what we know of the things we're going to fight. Just be ready to back me up against the Midnight Essence, and use regrowth on any wounded. But you will find difficulty getting useful answers, Son of Honor. These do not have souls or minds. They are recreations forged by Honor's will, and do not have the memories of the real people. Surely we can learn things. They were created to convey only certain ideas. Further pressing will merely reveal the thinness of the facade. I need to get Navani and Yasna in here. Let them pick at these recreations. The Windrunner slowed Dalinar so they hovered in midair. He ported toward the town under attack and says he'll go down to distract them while Dalinar goes and helps the people. He says Dalinar will drop in 30 seconds. The man's helm materialized, then he plunged toward the monsters. How? How do we get the armor? Speak the words. Which words? You will know or you will not. Great. He'd planned to be with Fenn the whole time and instead had wasted time flying to the battle. He landed outside the town and watched as the other Radiant fought, a glowing blue beacon sweeping about with the grand shard blade as he clashed with the Midnight Essence. Dalinar entered the town stealthily, searching for Fenn. He found the barn that he had started in last time, but she was nowhere to be found. In the house, he found the corpse of the wife of the man whose body Fenn would have inhabited, but the child was nowhere to be seen, nor Fenn. One of the Midnight Essence attacks Dalinar, and he grabs it, infusing it with stormlight, then tosses it at a nearby building, which the creature becomes stuck to. He cut through a few more that attacked as he made his way through the town. In the center of town, he finds a massive bonfire surrounded by dozens of people. They'd formed messy ranks, protecting children at the center. And Fenn stood on a box commanding the forces. Dalinar was impressed by Fenn's ability to quickly rally the people. The Windrunner appeared, making quick work of the remaining creatures. At the end, he saved a glare for Dalinar. "What are you doing standing there? Why haven't you helped?" We'll have words about this when we return," he shouted, pointing toward one of the fallen. "Go, help the wounded." Dalinar followed the gesture, but walked toward Fenn instead of the wounded. Fenn is shocked to see Dalinar show up, and the Stormfather slows down the vision to a crawl so they can speak. They sat together, and Dalinar explained his experience with the visions. He tells her that she did better in this one than he had, as he'd only worried about the man's wife and daughter. She'd rallied the whole town. Fenn seemed haunted by how the wife had died, and asks Dalinar why he trapped her in this vision. He says he'd wanted to speak with her in person, and again points out her defense of the town people. He tells her that she needs to do the same for the world now. She can't believe that the Knights Radiant have returned, and that Dalinar Kolin, a tyrant and murderer, was chosen by the Almighty to lead them. Dalinar drew in Stormlight as proof, but Fenn says that she can't believe that Dalinar is the one that was chosen to lead them. She compares his mandate from God to the same argument the Heriocracy used to seize control of the government. Sadiz, the Sunmaker, had claimed to be called by the Almighty as well. "Maybe you're right, and I am a tyrant. Maybe letting my armies into your city is a terrible risk, but maybe you don't have good options. Maybe all the good men are dead, so all you have is me. Spitting into the storm isn't going to change that, Fenn. You can risk possibly being conquered by the Alethi, or you can definitely fall to the Voidbringer assault alone." Fenn seems impressed by his outburst, telling him that his earlier messages had sounded too much like a committee. They walk away from the slowed down people, and she tells him what people across Roshar have been saying about him. "You've been the hottest topic on the Spanreed informant networks, Dalinar Kolin. Dalinar Kolin, the Blackthorn, has gone mad. He claims to have killed the Almighty. One day he refuses to fight, then the next day he marches his armies off on an insane quest into the Shattered Plains. He says he's going to enslave the Voidbringers." "Nobody expects every report to be true, Dalinar, but I had extremely good information claiming you'd lost your mind. Refounding the Knights Radiant, raving about a desolation? You seized the throne of Alethkar in all but title, but refused to fight the other High Princes, and instead ran your armies off into the Weeping. Then you told everyone a new storm was coming. That was enough to convince me that you really were mad. But then the storm came. The Everstorm proved I wasn't mad. It proved that something was happening." Dalinar suddenly stopped. "You think I'm working with them? You think that explains my behavior, my foreknowledge? You think I've been acting erratically because I've been in contact with the Voidbringers?" "All I knew was that the voice on the other end of the Spanreed was not the Dalinar Kolin I'd expected. The words were too polite, too calm, to be trusted. And now?" Fenn turned. "Now, I'll consider. Can I see the rest of it? I want to know what happens to the little girl." The people rushed back into motion, and Fenn went to talk with the young girl. As he folded his arms to watch, he noted a shimmering in the air beside him. "We'll want to send more of these. We can only be served by more people knowing the truth the Almighty left behind. Can you bring in only one person per storm, or can we accelerate that somehow? And can you bring two people into two different visions at once?" The Stormfather rumbled. "I do not like to be ordered about. And you prefer the alternative, letting Odium win? How far will your pride push you, Stormfather?" "It is not pride. I am not a man. I do not bend or cower. I do what is in my nature, and to defy that is pain." The Radiant approached Fenn, like he had Dalinar the first time, and tells her the same message about coming to Yirithiru to train as a Radiant. "By design, certain things always happen in the visions," the Stormfather said. "I do not know Honor's every intention, but I know he wished you to interact with Radiants and know that men could join them." As the Radiant departed, the little girl began to speak to Fenn with the voice of the Almighty. "This is important," the Almighty had said. Do not let strife consume you. Be strong. Act with honor, and honor will aid you." Except honor was dead. At the end of it, Fenn turned toward Dalinar, her eyes measuring. "She still doesn't trust you. She wonders if I created this vision with the power of the Voidbringers. She no longer thinks I'm mad, but she does continue to wonder if I've joined the enemy." "So you've failed again." "No. Tonight she listened, and I think she'll end up taking the gamble of coming to Yirithiru." The Stormfather rumbled, sounding confused. "Why?" "Because I know how to talk to her now. She doesn't want polite words or diplomatic phrases. She wants me to be myself. I'm fairly certain that's something I can deliver." And that is where we'll end for now.
Interesting.
Next time, we will get our first Bridge 4 POV. Actually, we're going to get two Bridge 4 POVs next time.
Cool.
We're going to get Sigzel's POV and Rock's POV. And after these POVs, I will be able to tell you who it is that has a crush on Relaine, and Relaine has a crush back.
Let's go.
So you left that to look forward to. For now, though, thank you guys so much for listening. You guys can join our Discord. Link to do that is in the episode description. Follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. And our cover art was made by our good friend Alex. That's at Alex_BigBoy. Also on Twitter. There's also a link in the episode description, as always. Thank you guys. We'll see you guys next time. Life before death. Strength before weakness. Journey before destination.